We have been told over and over again that life in the West has never been more secular. Pundits insist that what remains of our Christian heritage resembles the now vacant cathedrals that haunt our urban centers, or the fast-emptying rural churches sprinkled throughout the so-called flyover states. Irrelevant, crumbling, and abandoned. Despite this well-worn narrative, a closer look reveals that secularism's victory dance is premature. A strong argument could be, and has been made, that never before have we lived in a more spiritual age. Modern man tolerates and even embraces the supernatural, from horoscopes to omens to fate to fascination with ghost stories to a vague deistic hope that the big man upstairs is looking out for us. The atheistic dream of a world shorn of belief in the sacred is dying more rapidly than the Christian worldview it sought to replace. On a popular level, people remain stubbornly committed to the reality of a world beyond nature. Even the best efforts of a bloated and biased scientific establishment to disabuse them of such antiquated fantasies have not changed their minds. But this entrenched commitment to the reality of the beyond should not cause the Christian to rejoice. Rather, it should be a source of great sadness. Although Christians can celebrate the long overdue rejection of the cold, hopeless, anti-supernatural worldview of the atheistic establishment, they must simultaneously mourn the corresponding rise of the nebulous spiritualism of the present. We must mourn this spiritualism because not all spiritualism is created equal. In other words, the supernatural world described by the Bible, in which God is sovereign, is not the same as horoscopes, fate, or deism. The modern secularist may tolerate some form of spiritualism, at least in a general sense, but he will presumably never accept a supernaturalism that claims absolute authority over his life. In fact, as has been the case throughout the woeful history of our fallen race, the worldly mind will consistently take up arms against this kind of claim. It will march proudly into an ideological battle against any demand for its unqualified allegiance. The resurrection of Christ represents just such a claim of absolute authority. As luminous as the first beams of sunshine that brightened Jerusalem the first Easter morning 2,000 years ago, the light of Christ's victory over the grave scatters the drowsy pagan gloom of the present. Jesus' resurrection represents the highest sort of supernaturalism, but in a supportive fashion. More on this shortly. By stating the matter this way, I am not at all claiming that the historical reality of the resurrection of Jesus is thereby unimportant. Far from it. As I will argue at length in what follows, it is of supreme importance. But the biblical writers did not share the skepticism of miracles that has anesthetized the West since the Enlightenment. Therefore, they did not encounter the same hurdles to belief in the resurrection that might cause someone today to stumble. For the writers of the New Testament, at least two astonishing, revolutionary, world-changing facts emerged from the empty tomb of Christ. First, according to the apostles, the resurrection of Christ as a physical miracle in the space-time continuum was simply the culmination of a series of miraculous interventions by the Creator of the universe, going all the way back to the dawn of history. We will discuss this statement in more detail in Chapter 2. For the moment, we only wish to point out that the physical fact of the resurrection was supportive of a far greater narrative. Therefore, in the second place, the God-intended meaning of the resurrection of Christ was paramount for the apostles. The historical reality thus plays a supporting role to the theological meaning of that first Easter morning. Both, however, are indispensable. The historical reality of Jesus' resurrection and its theological meaning are inseparable and essential parts of God's redemptive plan. Before proceeding, let me briefly discuss our terms. The resurrection refers, first and foremost, to the resurrection of Christ from the dead. See Matthew chapter 28, verse 1 and following. Mark chapter 16, verse 1 and following, Luke chapter 24, verse 1 and following, and John chapter 20, verses 1 through 10. The word can also refer to a more general event that will take place at the end of time, namely the reunion of body and soul for all who have ever lived, for good or for ill. See Daniel chapter 12, verse 2, Matthew chapter 25, verses 31 through 46, and John chapter 5, verses 25 through 29. As Paul explains in 1 Corinthians chapter 15, verse 20, our Lord's victory over the grave was the first fruits of a general resurrection harvest. His resurrection is thus the precursor to a more general future occurrence.